Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore. I'm your co-host, Andrew McPeak, and our mission here at Growing Leaders is to empower the emerging generations with skills to lead in real life. Tim, I'm really excited about today. I get excited about all of these, but I'm particularly excited about today because there was a date that just came and went that is a pretty significant one, November 22nd. Why don't you let the good folks in know what's going on, what happened on November 22nd?
Well, on November 22nd, I turned 60 years old.
All right.
I don't feel 60, but maybe that's what all 60-year-olds say today.
Are you feeling 70?
Yeah. You talking about IQ?
Yeah.
No, when I was growing up, anybody that said they were 60 years old, they were very, very old.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that was the way we used to look at. And today I say, oh, 60 is a new 50, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
A new 40.
You're like, I got a decade of,
that's
of
right.
ideas left I want to try or whatever. Yeah.
But I will say this. At 60, I have slowed down a bit from when I was 40.
Yeah.
The run and gun. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Let's change the world by Friday.
Yeah.
I still want to do that, but I'm slowing down. I'm thinking more, processing more. And that's why I thought, Yeah, this might be a good conversation.
Yeah, he's doing 65 events instead of 70, so it's like, how is this guy doing? Well, last year, almost exactly a year ago, I turned 30. You know, we joke about how we're almost 30 years apart.
Yeah.
And in that season, being 30, I got very reflective, you know?
Yeah.
Have I done what I was supposed to do up until this point? And am I setting myself up well for the future? And I started thinking about this. And so sitting here as somebody who just went through that for their 30s, I can't imagine what it must be like going through it in your, you know, turning 60 and thinking about where have I been? Where am I now? Where am I headed? And I've gotten the sense that reflectivity is definitely happening.
Well, it is. And the good news is at 60, you can have the same thought you had before, but you forgot you had that thought. So it seems like a new thought. So anyway, I do want this to be a conversation where we just talk about maybe a half a dozen reflections that I've had recently that are probably a result of feeling like I'm in the final laps of my career.
Yeah.
Hopefully lapse, not elapse, okay? Yeah. But I know, there I go again. But I'm hoping this, listeners, is helpful to you to just say, well, where am I in my career, and my state of life? Am I caring about the things and about the things that I really, really think are important, the people I think are important? Or have I gotten caught up in maybe a sideways energy or a sidebar that has no business taking up my time?
Well, every single week on this podcast, I feel like you share bokus of wisdom with our listeners and with me. I'm sitting here in a class on leadership every single week. But I think one of your greatest things that you bring to the table whenever we have a conversation is your ability to take a whole bunch of thoughts and condense them and help us walk away with a nugget of truth. And I think that's exactly what you've done. These are not the only six things you've learned in the last 60 years. But what I would say in knowing what you're about to share is you have condensed 60 years of experience to say, as I'm thinking about what's going to take up my time for the next however many years, these are the things that are going to be at the top of my mind. Yeah. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. I know the sand is moving through the hourglass, and I'm now focusing on a handful of things, not a thousand things.
Yeah.
So,
well, that makes this conversation really special. And so what we want to do is we want to take time, we want to leave time for you to share six pieces of wisdom with us, some things that you learned many years ago and some things that maybe are more recent. But all of these things are things that you're saying, as I sit here with the perspective I have, this is what's risen to the top for me. And I would just encourage you, listener, whether you're in an athletic environment or you're in a school somewhere, you're in a college or university, you're working with kids as a parent, and whether you're 25 as a leader or you're 65 as a leader, I think there's some truth and some wisdom you can probably pull from this. So
before I start, Andrew, I want you to have permission to jump in because you're reflecting at a person who's moving into midlife.
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear your input, too. I want
Tim,
to be as valuable as possible.
I'll be happy to jump in.
Okay. So we have a total of a half a dozen that we're going to try to cover in the next several minutes. I'll just start with number one here.
Let's go.
I feel like number one is a good place to start. At 60, I feel like that's a good number to start
You've learned a whole lot, Tim. You've come a long way.
I do my best, you know. Okay. So number one, I would say the thing that's top of mind right now is to find and do what gives you energy.
Mm.
Find and do what gives you energy. So I think by the time you reach midlife, I hope you found a career or a routine that totally fits who you are, your gifts, your talents, your passions and interests. I think by 60 or moving towards 60, it's not just I found a thing I can use my gift, but I'm really doing the things within that gift scope that just energize me.
Yes.
Let me tell you why this is important. By the time you reach 60, you do have less energy than 40 or 30. So your energy levels are not infinite.
Yeah.
Like you thought they were in your 20s. I think by 60, you have more of a been there, done that mindset. So you go, whatever, you know. And yeah, you just feel like I've already done this. So you've got to do the stuff that gives you energy because you have limited energy.
It makes
sense,
yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
So even today, I find myself, when I look at my life today, and it's often thanks to you and the other vice presidents here at Growing Leaders, the other team members, I'm able to whittle in on a handful of things and not just do everything I did when I first launched Growing Leaders in 2003. So I'm writing more, which is so exciting for me. I'm speaking, I'm crafting our vision, and mentoring other leaders. That's really the four big things that I tend to do on any given day. So while I still do some essential tasks that are outside of my wheelhouse and I don't really like them, I'm not getting goosebumps every day with all the tasks, I think the majority of my day at 60, I'm really doing the stuff that gives me energy. I'm investing in tasks and projects that not only fit my gift mix, but they wake me up in the morning and energize me.
When I think about this, I think about hearing from you. In fact, you were the first person I ever heard talk about. I know you weren't the first one to talk about it, but the concept of strength-based leadership, right?
Yeah.
And we even have a habitude, the gift factor, that's really about that. And that's what I'm thinking about when I think about this, is you finding what is it that where I offer this, it's a strength for me.
Yeah.
I'm going to get the most return on investment. And because of those things, it's also energizing for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that's right.
I think great organizations are able to, every individual has the space to figure out that for themselves.
Yeah.
But they also, and we're trying to do this at Growing Leaders, I think a lot, part of how I spend my time is thinking about how are we letting or making space for Tim to exercise or live mostly in the areas of strength and energy for him. Because what happens is when everybody's doing that in an organization, now you're never going to be able to do that completely, but when everybody's getting the opportunity to do that, the whole organization thrives
as
a result of that.
Yeah. So let me volley back. It seems to me, in my mind, that our careers are like a funnel. When you first begin, it's wider at the top and it gets narrow at the bottom. And when we're early in our careers, we don't have as much authority to do whatever we darn well please.
So true.
We got to do stuff that just has to be done. But as you move forward, so millennials listening in, I want to make sure you know at 27, let's say, you can't just say, I'm just doing what gives me energy. Well, a little bit, yeah. But some just need to get, I really think you earn your right to get to this place, and I'm still earning my right to get to this place, but that's what you target.
Absolutely. I will never forget, Tim, years ago we interviewed John Acuff when his book Do-Over came out. Do you remember that?
I do.
And he made a statement that totally transformed the way I thought about work, and so much so that my wife and I went and read his book Do-Over after that. And then, by the way, if you're a millennial early in your career, read that book. Because one of the statements he made is he said, if you feel like your job is 70% things you like to do and 30% things you don't like to do, you should consider yourself one of the luckiest people in America.
That's right.
And I think that misconception I had of, well, your dream job is 100% things you love to do, that is a total lie, right? Because even you would say, I was lucky on
that's
a week,
right.
It's 95% things I like to
absolutely.
Do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I think that's a really great nugget of truth for us to go understand what we're actually talking about here. You're working your way towards it as your career goes
no
on.
No doubt about
but
it.
But it is important.
Okay, number two. The second reflection I have is identify the right measuring stick. So this might be kind of a duh statement for many listeners right now, but I think by the, let me just say it this way. Too many veteran leaders, senior leaders that are older, like me, have acknowledged to me that they've chosen the wrong barometer with which to measure their life, their career. It was an income level. It was a 401k. It was a corner office.
Yeah.
But it's some number, some raw number that kind of they just imitated someone else who chose that number at IBM or Microsoft or whatever, you know, that some other career. I think wherever you are right now, you need to be saying, I'm thinking a lot about how I measure the success and productivity of my life. And it may have little to do with money. Might, yeah. but yeah. might not. So, I just feel like for me, I'm really wanting to avoid the proverbial sin of climbing the ladder and then realizing when I get to the top, I leaned it against the wrong wall. Yeah, I know that's a phrase that we've often heard, but I climbed the ladder, darn, wrong building.
Yeah.
So I feel like for me, I chose this earlier, and it was thanks to my mentor, John Maxwell, who really helped me think this through, gosh, decades ago. But I think it's my wife and my children who are now adults. How are they coming along, and am I still mentoring them appropriately?
Yes.
I'm no longer a supervisor in their life. I'm a consultant in their life.
Yep.
But I'm hopefully a good one. You know, those kinds of things. The barometer needs to be chosen well. So maybe instead of asking the typical question, how much will I make? Maybe the right, better question is, how much will I contribute?
Yeah.
So I do need to make income. I need to put food on the table. But how much am I giving back? What am I contributing?
Yeah.
And this leads me to that whole notion that there might just be a difference between your job and your work.
Yes.
A job is a platform, and you can buy refrigerators and cars and homes with a good job. But your work is all about this calling that I feel like I have,
yeah.
this contribution that I'm going to make. And maybe I have five jobs, but I'm doing this greater work in all the jobs. That's that's the question I'm wanting you all to think through here. What's the greater work that I will be accomplishing, whatever position I get in my life?
I love that.
And one last thought on this one. Your contribution, listener, your barometer, may be something an employer or a job description never asked you to do.
Yep.
It's more. Now, I'm not saying instead of doing that, you need to do what you're asked.
And that doesn't mean you can't do it at work. But
that's right. Yeah,
but it may not be the thing people are looking at you and evaluating you on.
My father is 89. He had a job that he was very good at between 8 and 5 every day. But it was after 5 o'clock that he really started using his time to volunteer and serve and mentor and coach. And I'm thankful. It didn't have to be something I'm paid to do, but it's something I know. This is what's going to be remembered later.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
I think lots of people, when they think about success, they're using the term happiness.
Yeah.
Especially on behalf of their kids.
Yeah.
I hear you using different words without necessarily saying those words. I wonder what words you would replace happiness with as you think about how you're establishing your own time. Is it legacy? Is it meaning? Is it purpose? What service? What would you put there?
I think it's all those words. I think it's words like contribution. I think meaning is definitely one of them. I think satisfaction. Not just I'm satisfied with my income, but it's an internal fulfillment that you feel. You can look in the mirror and go, I like the person staring back at me. These are all cliches. I realize it. But boy, at 60, it's a prevailing thought that I'm having. I don't want to get to the end and said, well, he sputtered to the end and he's done.
Yeah.
You know, and he made some money. I really hit his
peak at 42 or whatever it is.
I had my heyday, and now there's today.
Yeah.
So we'll talk more about that later, but I really, really believe there's got to be a meaningful way to assess our value, and it's probably not monetary.
Yeah. That's good. All right.
Good.
Take us to three.
Number three, say no to most opportunities. Mm. Say no to most opportunities. Now, I know we have different levels of talent listening to this program, different levels of position and income and status and so forth. But I actually believe by 60, you've moved into a very different phase than what you had perhaps at 30, where you were saying yes to almost every opportunity. You're trying to prove your credibility that I can do this.
Yeah.
Well, by 60, if you're still trying to prove your credibility, something may have gone awry somewhere in the last 20 years of your life or maybe 30 years of your life. So I really believe we master the art by age 50, 60 of saying no. I remember hearing Steve Jobs in an interview before he passed away saying, I relish not what I said yes to, but all the things I said no to at Apple to do these things that we did. And whether you agree with him or not, he said no to a lot to do an iPhone and a handful of things that we all now feel like we can't live without.
Yes.
In fact, he was so sure of himself, he said, I will tell the customer what they want.
Yeah, I remember him saying that.
Very audacious. So, I think saying no is the secret to an effective second half of your career.
Interesting.
And maybe saying yes to the right things is good in the first half. So a couple of thoughts on this one. I think by this time, the only way you can live this kind of life is that your need for accolades subsides. Mm. Your ego is tamed. your desire for recognition is under control, and you're able to really settle in on the stuff that whether anybody claps or not, I'm really good with this. I feel like that's rare, because we're all still looking for likes, shares, views, retweets, followers, you know. And we do want followers at Growing Leaders. But for me, as the founder, I'm really thinking about this. What am I saying no to? That's kind of the bottom line.
Wow, that's so fascinating to me, because I feel like in the season that I am in, this is a constant thought well. Yeah. And it's part of the life cycle of the organization that we're in right now, too. We have a lot of opportunities. And so figuring out what the... in fact, I want to actually turn this into a question, because the question that often comes up is, how do you know what the right thing is to say no to? Are there any barometers that you have for how to assess that?
Yeah, there are. But let me tell you first what they aren't. I just mentioned accolades, recognition. Those are nice, but if that's really the reason you make a decision, you're probably going to go a lot of directions that are sideways, not forward. Do you remember the other day in our leadership team meeting, we had a major potential partner, well-known, nationally known partner that we dickered about.
Yeah.
Do we even do this? Now, if I was 20, I'd go, heck yeah.
Yeah, let's say yes to everything.
Look who is, you know, look who we're partnering with. But we, if you remember, we really wrestled, and we eventually said, well, if it's within these parameters, we will do it. If not, we won't.
Yeah.
And fortunately, it worked out. But that was really meaningful for our relatively young team to make that decision. Now, here's what I look at. I was taught this years ago by Dr. Maxwell, who I served under for 20 years. But I look at three things to make those yeses and then to keep away from on the no's. Number one is, what am I being asked to do? So it's required. What's required of me? Mm. Everybody that's working has a job to do. Most of us have a job description, okay? So I got to make sure that I tend first and foremost to the things I agreed to do. I'm keeping a commitment I've already made. Now, I can always renegotiate that next year, but I don't want to, like you just mentioned, some of your peers might be going, I should be doing everything I love. Well, maybe.
Yeah.
But we'll do what you
agree to.
Take care
of what you're required
to
do
first.
That's right. Yeah.
Number two is result. So I want to say yes to the stuff that really lends itself to give me the most results. The biggest bang for my buck is a term we hear. It gives us, productivity.
Yeah.
If I look at all the activities I engage in any given day, these few rather than these many are the ones that really produce. They get the job done. So required, result, and then the last one is reward. And this is an internal one. I make decisions, going back to the very first insight on this podcast, that I say, that's just stuff that gives me energy. I feel satisfied, fulfilled, rewarded when I do those things. If I can find somebody that fits all three of those, required, result, and reward, I'm probably going to say yes to the request.
That is really good. I was taking notes. So I told you, leadership class, it's happening right now. That's great. Do you want to take us to number four?
Yeah, number four. This is so key, and I don't think it gets talked about enough. Win the respect of those closest to you. Let me say it again. Win the respect of those closest to you. Now, the reason I think this needs to be underscored today is, Andrew, we live in a very different day, the last decade of our life. Thanks to social media, millions of people have begun using a life scorecard of how many likes, shares, views, and followers they have. But we're trying to win over people that we may not even know.
Yeah. Some people I've never even met face to face.
Yeah, that's right. And really, do I want to get to the end of life and said, I had 50,000 followers? Or will I say, no, my spouse, my children, my closest friends have a high respect for me. Those that knew me best respect me most. That's huge. So I really think it's almost the opposite of what most people might be going after at 20. I'm just saying, no cut downs to 20-year-olds, but culture may push you the wrong direction and not even knowing it, without even knowing it. So I feel like we got to move away from the social media mindset, and which, by the way, we never the most. We're never the best. So we're obsessed and depressed
FOMO.
By comparing ourselves. In fact, we were just talking earlier about Instagram's decision. Talk about that and why they did this.
Yeah, they've made a recent decision that, frankly, is shocking to me, because I don't really see the business application. It feels like they're trying to be responsible with the thing they've created, which I am all for that. But Instagram has decided to remove the ability to see how many likes other people's pictures are getting on Instagram. Yeah. So you can still see who liked your photos, but you cannot see who liked or how many likes another photo got. So what they're taking away is the comparison thing.
That's right.
You won't be able to look at your photo and go, well, I got 100, but she got 200, so she must be cooler than I am.
Yeah, yeah.
And they actually may lose users because of it. It's a real possibility.
Yeah.
But it's quite fascinating that they're saying, we're going to put our stake in the ground and say, we're not going to be we're not going to be a social media platform that perpetuates this constant comparison gap that's happening out there in the world. So
while I agree there are ups and downsides to this decision, what I like about it is it takes away, or at least attempts to take away, the comparison trap.
Yes.
The comparison trap that so many of us fall into.
Yeah.
So when I say win the respect of those closest to you, let me give you some categories real quick. I already mentioned my spouse, my wife, Pam. Our kids, as they age, so they're in their 30s and 20s, late 20s and early 30s.
Yeah.
Our closest friends, our colleagues that see us day in and day out. This is a much more accurate scorecard or report card for a successful life because they really know the ins and outs. So I feel like there is no greater honor that I can get than to hear my wife tell her friends, my husband practices what he preaches.
Mm.
I mean, for you, it'd be Anna saying, I know this guy better than anybody else in the world.
Yep.
He lives it.
He's the real deal. Yeah.
That's way better than somebody that lives in Oregon that I don't. And they go, I think he's a nice guy. You know, that's just
they saw you once on a stage or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. So I feel like that's huge.
That's so good. I will never forget years ago, my first job, we had a professional musician that all of us on staff got to spend some time with. And behind closed doors in a tighter meeting, he admitted that he had spent so many years on the road that he had been spending the last 5 years trying to reconnect with his son who wanted nothing to do with him because he was never there. Yeah. And he basically looked us all in the eye and said, don't make the mistake that I made.
Wow.
And I'll never forget that comment because I think you're exactly right. Yeah. When you can, when you feel like, well, the answer is the accolades of everybody I don't know, you will find yourself heading down a path to something that's not actually going to bring satisfaction in
the end.
Not in the end.
And maybe fun now.
And definitely not be representative of the kind of person you want to be at the end of your life. So
absolutely.
That's great.
Good. All right, number five. Decide what finishing well looks like.
Mm.
Decide what finishing well looks like. So my friend and colleague Steve Moore, we've been accountability partners for a long time now. We often talk about the subject because we're both inching toward the end. What does it look like to finish well in my career, in my marriage, in my life? And career is a big part of it. I mean, we spend more time with each other than anybody after, you know, 5 o'clock. So I just feel like too many of us have a highlight in our careers that was years ago, but somehow we drift as we age and we fail to live by those same standards as seasoned veterans. This happens all the time.
Yep.
Very few, relatively few leaders finish well.
Yep.
We remember 1989, but we don't remember today.
Yep.
Remember
their memories are greater than their dreams.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think instead, why not be proactive about deciding what a win looks like in life? And that's what I've decided. Now, my win is so closely tied to this work I do with you, Andrew, and our team. I hope to equip 32 million young influencers, give or take a million. Thank you for that laughter.
Yes.
I want to equip 32 million young influencers who experience our habitudes and then get involved in projects that solve problems and serve people. They're actively practicing these habits and attitudes that we have been proponents of now for years. Now, we're going to be tweaking them over the years. We're going to be making them relevant. But my point is, I'd love to sit in a wheelchair one day or a rocking chair one day, preferably a rocking chair.
I think I would choose that
too. And just say, I think it got done, or it's getting done.
Yeah.
I can see the
end. Headed there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So before I pass the baton on, I want to be able to say, I really, really think that I picked a good finishing well, and I'm moving toward that single goal.
Mm, yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. What is your last one?
Yeah, the last one. This is a cousin to the previous one I just shared, but I really think this makes it more tangible. Determine what you want people to thank you for. Determine what you want people to thank you for. Now, this is a little bit of a tweak. So for years, we've been using life sentence. I've been thinking about life sentence since the 80s. So life sentence is basically the thought, instead of just building a purpose statement for your life, and it's basically what you say you want your purpose to be, a life sentence says, what do others watch you and think is what you want to be?
Yes.
So their sentence at the funeral, their sentence at the end of your life is huge. But this is even more clear. Sandra Stanley, my friend, came up with this phrase, and she said it's her barometer. When you get toward the end of your life, what do you want people to line up and express gratitude for? That's a very good question. And I've adopted it. What do I want them to say thank you for? So let me tell you how this helps me now. If I know that, starts informing my life right now, hopefully way before the lineup has started.
Yeah.
And maybe the thank yous start trickling in at 30 and 40 and 50 and 60. So I just think this thank you, oh my gosh, you can always work backwards from a thank you. Do something that would get that thank you. So those people, when they line up, I'm talking about as a hypothetical, as they line up, may not have time to express thanks for 100 valuable things you did, although you did, you were very busy. They may just have one or two. So I believe it's a healthy guide to choose what you want folks to express gratitude for right now and then start living by those ideals. It goes back to those three things I always keep. You're probably tired of me saying them, but think high road, think big picture, think long term. Those are gigantic.
That's awesome. Well, we actually have a line of people who'd like to come in and thank you. I'm sure we could find a line of people, but I think that's great. And especially your phraseology of once you know what you want people to thank you for, that life sentence that you hope you're remembered for, it then can affect your daily interactions with people. You write that life sentence one day at a time by the way you treat people, the way you interact.
Yeah.
And I would say that you're one of those people who you're the same person every single day, on stage or off stage. And in that way, you're writing that life sentence every day. So I see this as
you're kind.
Those phrases that you just said, that's how I would describe you.
Andrew, you're either kind or you're blind. One of the two.
Well, I would be one of those people in line thanking you for being that kind of person. So, well, thank you so much for sharing these ideologies with us and the wisdom.
So for the listener's sake, I want to close with a story, and then you can close this out.
Okay.
One of my favorite stories that illustrates this kind of thinking actually happened more than 100 years ago. In the late 19th century, a Swedish chemist, at the time really not well known, his name was Alfred Nobel. He got up one morning, put his robe on, put his slippers on, and kind of stumbled out to the kitchen table. And he opened up the morning newspaper and began to read the obituary column. Now, that's not something I read every day, but, who are the people that passed away this past week? Well, he got a major wake-up call. And I guess you want wake-up calls in the morning, but he got a major wake-up call. He saw his own name in the obituary column.
Wow.
That's weird. Yes, that's just kind of creepy, actually. But he quickly realized, they had gotten him mistaken with his brother, who did recently pass away.
Yeah.
But he thought, they thought it was me. Oh, my gosh, I get to read my own obituary. I get to read what they're saying about me, after they think I'm gone. Well, here's what he read, and I paraphrase, but here's what they basically read. Alfred Nobel, a Swedish chemist, died a very wealthy man. Having been the inventor of dynamite, he enabled us to kill more people at once than at any time in our history. I mean, that's kind of how they worded it.
What a legacy.
Well, he immediately, you can imagine, thought, oh my gosh, you mean seriously, I'm being remembered for my wealth and the fact that I created dynamite and enabled people to blow others up? So he decided, I've got to make a change. If that's what they're saying, I don't want that being said. So he took his wealth, by the way, and put it away into a very special fund.
Yes.
Now remember, his name is Alfred
Nobel.
Yes. And everybody heard of the Nobel Peace Prize? So that was started at that point and began to accumulate. But every year now around the world, we find leaders that foster peace, and they're awarded millions of dollars.
Yes, but we're not celebrating him for war. We're celebrating him for peace.
Just the opposite.
Yes.
So here's what I love about his story. It was actually what he said just prior to passing away, which was years later. He said, I believe everybody deserves a chance to change their obituary in midlife.
Love it.
I love that. And so listeners, here's what I'm doing for you today with this podcast, giving you a chance, if you need it, to change your obituary.
Love it. Thanks so much, Tim, for sharing this. Thank you for giving your life to this mission. You are not done yet. We got a lot of plans, a lot of vision, so I'm not worried about that at all.
We got schemes.
Yeah, we do have schemes. You and I, we never quit. So, but thank you so much for that wisdom that you shared with us. One of the ways that Tim has really articulated this vision that he's headed towards, that he actually talked about in number five of his wisdom that he shared, is a program that we're doing, Habitudes. Specifically, we're focusing on social-emotional learning. We want to build life skills in kids. And so if you want to be a part of this mission, I invite you to go to growingleaders.com and take a look at our Habitudes for Social-Emotional Learning program. In doing that, you're actually coming alongside us in a mission that is near and dear to Tim's heart. And so I would invite you to check that out and to come be a part of what we're trying to do with that. Growingleaders.com, click on Habitudes, look for social emotional learning. Well, as always, if you can rate this podcast, that gets the word out about what we're doing here. 5 stars on iTunes is always a plus. And connect with us on social media as well. We're at Growing Leaders and at Tim Elmore, most of the places where you are. And then finally, if you've got ideas for this podcast, things you want us to talk about, shoot us an email, podcast@growingleaders.com. Tim, thanks again for sharing your wisdom with us. Good luck on year 61, and we'll see you guys next time.